From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. This is a special on the confirmation hearings on the nomination of General Michael Hayden to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He appeared today before the Senate Intelligence Committee. The committee chairman, Kansas Republican Pat Roberts, opened the session with a statement that alluded to a central difficulty. How can lawmakers assure the public that they're maintaining oversight over the nation's intelligence agencies when so much of the information about these agencies is secret?
The committee will come to order. The committee meets today to receive testimony of the president's nomination for the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, the public debate in regards to your nomination has been dominated not by your record as a manager or your qualifications, the needs of the CIA, its strengths, and its weaknesses, but rather the debate is focused almost entirely on the presidentially authorized activities of another agency. The National Security Agency's terrorist surveillance program became public last December as a result of a grave breach of national security. A leak allowed our enemy to know that the president had authorized the NSA to intercept the international communications of people reasonably believed to be linked to Al-Qaeda. At that time, largely uninformed critics rushed to judgment, decrying the program as illegal and unconstitutional. I think in the interim that cooler heads have prevailed, and there is now a consensus that we should not only be listening to Al-Qaeda communications, but we must be listening to them. Last week, in the wake of another story, those same critics reprised their winter performance, again making denouncements and condemnations on subjects about which they know little or nothing. Inevitably, all of the media, all of America for that matter, looks to us for comment. More often than not, although very frustrating, we are literally unable to say anything. Anyone who has ever served on a Congressional Intelligence Committee has struggled with the issue of secrecy. The result of this conundrum is that we quite often get accused of simply not doing our job. Such accusations, by their very nature, are uninformed and therefore are not accurate. Unfortunately, I have found that ignorance is no impediment for some critics. I fully understand the desire to know. I'm a former newspaper man, but I also appreciate the absolute necessity of keeping some things secret in the interest of national security. In this regard, I am truly concerned. This business of continued leaks, making it possible for terrorists to understand classified information about how we are preventing their attacks, is endangering our country and intelligence sources and methods and lives. I believe the great majority of American people understand this. I think they get it. Al-Qaeda is at war with the United States. Terrorists are planning attacks as we hold this hearing. Through very effective and highly classified intelligence efforts, we have stopped attacks. The fact we have not had another tragedy like 9/11 is no accident. But today in Congress and throughout Washington, leaks and misinformation are endangering our efforts. Bin Laden, Zarqawi, and their followers must be rejoicing. We cannot get to the point where we are unilaterally disarming ourselves in the war against terror. If we do, it will be game, set, match, Al-Qaeda. Remember Khobar Towers, Beirut, the USS Cole, embassy attacks, the two attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, 9/11, and attacks worldwide, and more to come if our efforts are compromised. I am a strong supporter of the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and civil liberties. But you have no civil liberties if you are dead. I have been to the NSA and seen how the terrorist surveillance program works. I have never seen a program more tightly run and closely scrutinized. When people asked on September 12th, whether we were doing everything in our power to prevent another attack, the answer was no. Now we are, and we need to keep doing it. I have often said, and I will say again, I trust the American people. They do have a right to know. I do not trust our enemies. Unfortunately, there is no way to inform the public without informing our adversaries. So, how can we ensure that our government is not acting outside the law if we cannot publicly scrutinize its actions? This institution's answer to that question was the creation of this committee. We are the people's representatives. We have been entrusted with this solemn responsibility, and each member of this committee takes it very seriously. We may have differences, but we take our obligations and responsibilities very seriously. Because intelligence activities are necessarily secret, the conduct of our oversight is also secret. In my humble opinion, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to telegraph to our adversaries how we intend to learn about their capabilities and their intentions. Oversight of the terrorist surveillance program is necessarily conducted behind closed doors. The Senate Intelligence Committee has been and will continue to exercise its oversight and responsibilities related to the NSA. Yesterday, the entire committee joined our continuing oversight of the program. Each member will have the opportunity to reach their own conclusions. I have no doubt that they will. I encourage that.
The senior Democrat at the hearing, Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, focused on privacy issues raised by reports that Hayden's former organization, the National Security Agency, has engaged in warrantless wiretapping and may have collected phone records for millions of Americans.
The need for objective, independent intelligence and analysis is surely as great now as it has ever been. The war on terrorism and the nuclear intentions and capabilities of Iran and North Korea could be life and death issues. Heaven help us if we have more intelligence fiascos similar to those before the Iraq War, when, in the words of the head of the British intelligence, the U.S. intelligence was being, quote, fixed around the policy, close quote. General Hayden has the background and credentials for the position of CIA director. But this job requires more than an impressive resume. One major question for me is whether General Hayden will restore analytical independence and objectivity at the CIA and speak truth to power, or whether he will shape intelligence to support administration policy and mislead Congress and the American people as Director Tenet did. Another major question is General Hayden's views on a program of electronic surveillance of American citizens, a program which General Hayden administered for a long time. That is the program which has taken up a great deal of the public attention and concern in recent weeks. The war on terrorism not only requires objective, independent intelligence analysis, it also requires us to strike a thoughtful balance between our liberty and our security. Over the past 6 months, we have been engaged in a national debate about NSA's electronic surveillance program and the telephone records of American citizens. That debate has been hobbled because so much about the program remains classified. Public accounts about it are mainly references by the administration, which are selective and incomplete, or the result of unverifiable leaks. For example, the administration has repeatedly characterized the electronic surveillance program as applying only to international phone calls and not involving any domestic surveillance. In January, the President said, quote, the program focuses on calls coming from outside of the United States, but not domestic calls. In February, the Vice President said, some of our critics call this a domestic surveillance program. It is not domestic surveillance. Ambassador Negroponte said, quote, this is a program that was ordered by the President of the United States with respect to international telephone calls to or from suspected al-Qaeda operatives and their affiliates. This was not about domestic surveillance. Earlier this year, General Hayden appeared before the press club, where he said of the program, quote, the intrusion into privacy is also limited only international calls. Now, after listening to the administration's characterizations for many months, America woke up last Thursday to the USA Today headline, quote, NSA has massive database of Americans' phone calls, close quote. The report said, quote, the National Security Agency has been secretly collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans. The NSA program reaches into homes and businesses across the nation by amassing information about the calls of ordinary Americans, most of whom aren't suspected of any crime, close quote. The president says we need to know who al-Qaeda is calling in America, and we surely do. But the USA Today article describes a government program where the government keeps a database, a record, of the phone numbers that tens of millions of Americans with no ties to al-Qaeda are calling. And the 12th New York Times article quotes, quote, one senior government official who, quote, confirmed that the NSA had access to records of most telephone calls in the United States, close quote. So the leaks are producing piecemeal disclosures, although the program, excuse me, remains highly classified. Disclosing parts of the program that might be the most palatable and acceptable to the American people, while maintaining secrecy until they're leaked, about parts that may be troubling to the public is not acceptable. It is hard to see, however, if the leaks about this program are accurate, how the only intrusions into Americans' privacy are related to international phone calls, as General Hayden said at the National Press Club. And it's certainly not hard to see the potential for abuse and the need for an effective check in law on the government's use of that information.
This is a special on the confirmation hearings of General Michael Hayden. He's been nominated to be the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington. This is a special from NPR News on the confirmation hearings on the nomination of General Michael Hayden to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Corey Flintoff. In his opening statement, Hayden gave his view of the agency he's seeking to lead.
CIA is unique among our nation's intelligence agencies. It's the organization that collects our top intelligence from human sources, where high-quality, all-source analysis is developed, where cutting-edge research and development for the nation's security is carried out. And as this committee well knows, these functions are absolutely critical to keeping America safe and strong. The CIA remains, as Porter Goss has said, the gold standard for many key functions of American intelligence. And that's why I believe that the success or failure of this agency will largely define the success or failure of the entire American intelligence community. The act you passed last year, the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act, gives CIA the opportunity and the responsibility to lead in ensuring the success of the Director of National Intelligence. Let me elaborate on that last sentence. The reforms of the last 2 years have in many ways made CIA's role even more important. Now, it's true the Director of Central Intelligence, the DCI, no longer sits on that seventh floor of the old headquarters building at Langley. It's both the head of the intelligence community and the CIA. But it's also true that no other agency has the connective tissue to the other parts of the intelligence community that CIA has. CIA's role as the community leader in human intelligence, as an enabler for technical access, in all source analysis, in elements of research and development, not to mention its worldwide infrastructure, underscore the interdependence between CIA and the rest of the community. And although the head of CIA no longer manages the entire intelligence community, the director continues to lead the community in many key respects. Most notably, the director of CIA is the National Human Manager, responsible for leading human intelligence efforts by coordinating and setting standards across the entire community. In addition, the agency is and will remain the principal provider of analysis to the President and his senior advisors. It also leads the community's open source activities through its Open Source Center, which is an invaluable effort to inform community analysis and help guide the activities of the rest of the IC. In a word, CIA remains, even after the Intelligence Reform Act, central to American intelligence. But this very centrality makes reforming CIA, in light of new challenges and new structures, an especially delicate and important task. The agency must be transformed without slowing the high tempo under which it already operates to counter today's threats. CIA must continue to adapt to new intelligence targets, a process underway in large part to the leadership of George Tenet and John McLaughlin and Porter Goss. And CIA must carefully adjust its operations, analysis, and overall focus in relation to the rest of the community because of the new structure, while still keeping its eye on the ball. Intelligence targets like proliferation and Iran and North Korea, not to mention the primary focus of disrupting al-Qaeda and other terrorists. The key to success for both the community, the intelligence community, and for CIA is an agency that is capable of executing its assigned tasks and cooperative with the rest of the intelligence community. CIA must pursue its objectives relentlessly and effectively, while also fitting in seamlessly with an integrated American intelligence community. Picture CIA's role in the community like a top player on a football team, critical, but part of an integrated whole that must function together if the team is going to win. And as I said elsewhere, even top players need to focus on the scoreboard, not on their individual achievements. Now, Mr. Chairman, let me be more specific about the vision I would have for CIA if I am confirmed. First, I'll begin with the collection of human intelligence. If confirmed as director, I'd reaffirm CIA's proud culture of risk-taking and excellence, particularly through the increased use of non-traditional operational platforms, a greater focus on the development of language skills, and the inculcation of what I'll call, for shorthand, an expeditionary mentality. We need our weight on our front foot, not on our back foot. We need to be field-centric, not headquarters-centric. Now, I strongly believe that the men and women of CIA already want to take risks to collect the intelligence we need to keep America safe. I view it as the director's job to ensure that those operators have the right incentives, the right support, the right top cover, and the right leadership to take those risks. My job, frankly, is to set the conditions for success. Now, if confirmed, I'd also focus significant attention on my responsibilities as National Human Manager. Now, I've got some experience in this type of role. As Director of NSA, I was the National SIGINT Manager, the National Manager for Signals Intelligence. And in that role, I often partnered with CIA to enable sensitive collection. Now, as I did with SIGINT, Signals Intelligence as Director of NSA, I would use this important new authority, the National Human Manager, to enhance the standards of tradecraft in human intelligence collection across the community. CIA's skills in human intelligence collection makes it especially well-suited to lead. As Director and as National Human Manager, I'd expect more from our human intelligence partners, those in the Department of Defense, the FBI, and other agencies, more both in terms of their cooperation with one another and also in terms of the quality of their tradecraft. Here again, we welcome additional players on the field, but they must work together as a team. Now, second, and on par with human intelligence collection, CIA must remain the U.S. government's center of excellence for independent, all-source analysis. If confirmed as director, I would set as a top priority working to reinforce the DI's, the Director of Intelligence's, tradition of autonomy and objectivity, with a particular focus on developing hard-edged assessments. I would emphasize simply getting it right more often, but with a tolerance for ambiguity and dissent manifested in a real clarity about our judgments, especially clarity in our confidence in our judgments. We must be transparent in what we know, what we assess to be true, and frankly, what we just don't know. Red cell alternative analysis, red cell alternative evaluations are a rich source of thought-provoking estimates, and they should be a part, an integral part of our analysis. And I believe this to be very important, we must also set aside talent and energy to look at the long view and not just be chasing our version of the current news cycle.
Hayden also outlined changes that he'd bring to restore a battered and demoralized agency.
I'd push for greater information sharing within the United States, among the intelligence community, with other federal, state, local, and tribal entities. There are a lot of players out there on this one. The DNI, the program manager for the information sharing environment, the intel community's chief information officer, other agencies like FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. CIA has an important role to play in ensuring that intelligence information is shared with those who need it. When I was at NSA, I focused my efforts to make sure that all of our customers had the information they needed to make good decisions. In fact, my mantra when I was at Fort Meade was that users should have access to information at the earliest possible moment and in the rawest possible form where value from its sharing could actually be obtained. That's exactly the approach I would use if confirmed at CIA. In my view, both of these initiatives, working with foreign partners and information sharing within the U.S., require that we change our paradigm from one that operates on what I've called a transactional basis of exchange, they ask, we provide, in favor of a premise of common knowledge commonly shared or information access. That would entail opening up more data and more databases to other intel community agencies, as well as trusted foreign partners, restricting the use of what I think is an overused originator-controlled caveat, and fundamentally embracing more of a risk management approach to the sharing of information. Finally, Mr. Chairman, everything I've said today matters little without the people, the great men and women of the CIA whom, if confirmed, I would happily join, but also the people of this great nation. Respectfully, Senators, I believe that the American intelligence business has too much become the football in American political discourse. Over the past few years, the intelligence community and the CIA have taken an inordinate number of hits, some of them fair, many of them not. There have been failures, but there have also been many great successes. Now, I promise you, we'll do our lessons learned studies, and I will keep you, I will keep this committee and your counterpart in the House fully informed on what we learn. But I also believe it's time to move past what seems to me to be an endless picking apart of the archaeology of every past intelligence success or failure. CIA officers, dedicated as they are to serving their country honorably and well, deserve recognition of their efforts, and they also deserved not to have every action analyzed, second-guessed, and criticized on the front pages of their morning paper. Accountability is one thing, and a very valuable thing, and we will have it. But true accountability is not served by inaccurate, harmful, or illegal public disclosures. I will draw a clear line between what we owe the American public by way of openness and what must remain secret in order for us to continue to do our job. CIA needs to get out of the news as source or subject, and focus on protecting the American people by acquiring secrets and providing high-quality all-source analysis. Internally, I would regard it as a leading part of my job to affirm and strengthen the excellence and pride and the commitment of CIA's workforce. And in return, I vow that if confirmed, we at CIA will dedicate ourselves to strengthening the American public's confidence and trust in the CIA and reestablishing the agency's social contract with the American people to whom we are ultimately accountable. The best way to strengthen the trust of the American people is to earn it by obeying the law and by showing what is best about this country. Now, as we do our work, we're going to have some really difficult choices to make, and I expect that not everyone will agree 100% of the time. But I would redouble our efforts to act consistent with both the law and a broader sense of American ideals. And while the bulk of the agency's work must, in order to be effective, remain secret, fighting this long war on the terrorists who seek to do us harm requires that the American people and you, their elected representatives, know that the CIA is protecting them effectively and in a way consistent with the core values of our nation. I did that at NSA, and if confirmed, we'll do that at the Central Intelligence Agency. In that regard, I view it to be particularly important that the Director of CIA have an open and honest relationship with congressional committees such as yours, so that the American people will know that their elected representatives are conducting oversight effectively. I would also look to the members of the committee who have been briefed and who have acknowledged the appropriateness of activities to say so when selected leaks, accusations, and inaccuracies distort the public's picture of legitimate intelligence activities. We owe this to the American people, and we owe it to the men and women of CIA. Mr. Chairman, I hope that I've given the members of the committee a sense of where I would lead the agency if I am confirmed. I thank you for your time, and dare I say, I look forward to answering the questions I know the members have.
We'll be back with questions that the committee members had for General Hayden, but first we have analysis from some guests. I'd like to welcome John Brennan, the former head of the CIA's National Counterterrorism Center. He's now the head of a security consulting firm, the Analysis Corporation. Welcome, too, to Ambassador Robert Hutchings, diplomat in residence at the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton University. He's a former chairman of the National Intelligence Council. John Brennan, let me begin with you, and it has to do with Senator Levin's concerns about privacy. Can the Michael Hayden you know, the man we just heard from, can he address privacy issues when he's presided over the NSA surveillance programs?
Well, in a word, I think yes. Mike Hayden has articulated well today the inherent tension between security and privacy. When he was at NSA, he took privacy issues very, very seriously. I worked very closely with him when I was at CIA. And when he was carrying out his SIGINT responsibilities, he made sure that he did not go beyond the letter of the law and also the spirit of the law as far as privacy matters are concerned. So he's very experienced in privacy because of the responsibilities that NSA has in that regard. In fact, he's coming to the CIA with a lot more experience on privacy matters than I think any other CIA director that has been nominated and has been in that position in the past. So yes, I think Mike is very qualified to fulfill those responsibilities.
And how would he address privacy at the CIA as opposed to the NSA?
Well, Humint collection is much different than SIGINT collection. Humint collection is targeted against specific individuals, and therefore he is going to have to become very knowledgeable about CIA's authorities and responsibilities and make sure that he understands what the limitations of those Humint collection capabilities are. So I think Mike is somebody who learns very quickly, and he wants to get into the details so that if he's going to be responsible for CIA activities, he wants to know what that organization is doing. So he's not going to take anything for granted, and he's not going to take anybody's word that will sort of assure him. He'll want to know what's going on.
Thank you. Ambassador Robert Hutchings, General Hayden talks about changing the culture of the CIA and its relation to other intelligence agencies. Do you think he can do it with the help of Stephen Kappas, the man who will probably be his deputy?
Well, I think he's a very good choice. First of all, I've known him a long time. I agree with John Brennan's characterization of him. I think he's got a very big task ahead of him, and I think a cultural revolution really needs to happen in the intelligence community that has very little to do with the organizational charts and the organizational fixation we've had for 2 years of intelligence reform. My own view is that we need to move from an era in which we think of intelligence as something done by a few highly secretive specialized agencies to a much more open, less secretive, more expansive view of intelligence.
General Hayden and Stephen Kappas both have been characterized as people who are sort of from the old guard of intelligence. Do you think that they're going to be able to make a change as sweeping as this?
That very much remains to be seen, and this is no reflection on the character of those two individuals. I have high regard for both, but I think it's a very tall order. This really is a transformation that we should have begun immediately after the end of the Cold War. We're now trying to do this in the midst of a major challenge in Iraq and the challenge of international terrorism, but I think it has to be done. And I'm afraid that we've moved in the last year or two in precisely the wrong direction of greater secrecy. And you can see it in the behavior of individual analysts who are now retreating back into the walls of CIA headquarters in Langley.
John Brennan, can this boat be turned around, and how long should it take?
Well, if the boat is the CIA, I think the CIA maybe has strayed off course, but Mike Hayden and Steve Kappas, if he is the new deputy, they have the leadership qualities, the integrity, the professionalism, and the experience, and the innovative ideas to take it forward.
Thank you. This is a special on the confirmation hearings of General Michael Hayden. He's been nominated to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington. This is a special from NPR News on the confirmation hearings on the nomination of General Michael Hayden to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Corey Flintoff. Hayden was challenged by Democrats on the committee, such as Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, who complained that many members of the committee kept in the dark about much of the NSA's work.
In 2002, General, you said to the Joint 9/11 Inquiry, and I'll quote here, "We as a country readdress the standards under which surveillances are conducted, the type of data NSA is permitted to collect, and the rules under which NSA retains and disseminates information." You said, and I quote, "We need to get it right." You said, and I quote, "We have to find the right balance." Now, I've looked very hard, General, and respectfully, I can't locate any "we" that was involved in any of these efforts that you've suggested. Certainly there wasn't any "we" that worked together on the ground rules for the program that the USA Today says you set up. So it seems to me whatever you and the administration have done with respect to these programs, and as you know, I can't even talk about what I learned yesterday. Whatever was done, you did it unilaterally. And as far as I'm aware, we as a country weren't part of any effort to set the standards in these programs. And most of the members of this committee were kept in the dark and weren't part of any informed debate about these programs. So, General, who is the "we" that you have been citing?
Senator, again, I briefed the leadership of this committee and the House committee. I briefed the chief judge of the relevant federal court. The passage you're referring to, I remember very, very clearly. It was an exchange I had with Senator DeWine, and we were talking about the balance between security and liberty, and I probably got a little too feisty and said something along the lines of, "Senator, I don't need to be reminded how many more Arabic linguists we need at NSA. I got that. What I really need is to understand, and for you to help me understand, where the American people draw the line between liberty and security." Senator, I believed that then. I believe it now. I used all the tools I had available to me to inform the other two branches of government exactly what NSA was doing. I believed in its lawfulness, and after these briefings, which I think numbered 13 up to the time of the New York Times story came out in December, I never left the room thinking I had to do anything differently. These are hard issues. Senator Levin asked me, are there privacy concerns? I said, of course, there are privacy concerns, but I'm very comfortable with what the agency did and what I did personally to inform those people responsible for oversight.
I want to stick to the public record. A handful of senators were informed. They weren't even allowed to talk to other senators. One of the senators was informed, raised questions about it. That doesn't strike me as a inclusive discussion of where we're going in this country. General, if we had not read about the warrantless wiretapping program in the New York Times last December, would 14 of the 16 members of this Senate Intelligence Committee ever heard about this program in a way consistent with national security?
Senator, I simply have no way of answering that question. I don't know.
Chairman Pat Roberts jumped in to assert that he and key members of the Senate and House Intelligence Committees were informed of and approved the NSA's programs.
It is my recollection of the 13 briefings with the very independent leadership in a bipartisan way after asking tough questions that nobody ever left the room that did not have an opportunity to ask further questions and to have the general follow up with an individual briefing if they so desired, and indicated at that time that they were, if not comfortable, thought the program was legal, very impressed with the program, and thanked the Lord that we had the program to prevent any further terrorist attack. That precedent started with President Carter, President Reagan, President Bush, President Clinton, and the current president, based on two members of the Intelligence Committee and two members of the Intelligence Committee on the other side of the Hill, basically, and the leadership. That was held closely. There's always a tug and pull by statute and otherwise, and otherwise, according to the 1947 National Security Act, in regards to the obligation of the executive to inform the legislative. The worry, of course, was in regard to if that briefing is expanded to a great many members about the possibility of leaks. I personally do not believe in my own judgment that members leak that much, although I know when some leak happens, always staff is blamed. But having said that, in this particular instance, I want to tell the senator from Oregon that I felt that I was acting independently, asked tough questions, and they were answered to my satisfaction. I obviously cannot speak for the other members, but it is my recollection that that was the case. We then moved from 2 to 5, and then from 5 to 7, because of my belief that the more people that were read into the operations of the program, the more supportive they would be, for very obvious reasons. We have a program, a capability, as I like to say it, to stop terrorist attacks when terrorist attacks are being planned. I think that is so obvious that it hardly bears repeating. And now we have the full committee. And so the independent check on what you are doing in regards to this whole capability is us. Now, it took a while for us to get here from here. But during those days, under previous presidents, we did not have this kind of threat, which is unique, very unique, and we did not have this capability. So things have changed, rightly so. So now the full committee will be the independent check in regards to what you're doing.
California Democrat Dianne Feinstein asked a series of questions on the interrogation and treatment of detainees, but was told that she couldn't get the answers until after the public session, when the committee continued to meet behind closed doors.
In an interview with Time magazine, Director of National Intelligence John Negroponte said that terrorist suspects held by the CIA in secret prisons are likely to remain incommunicado detention for as long as the war on terror continues. As principal deputy to the DNI, is it your policy that individuals may be secretly detained for decades?
Let me give you a full answer, ma'am, and let me give it to you in the closed session, but I would really be happy to answer your question.
Is there a periodic review of what useful and actionable intelligence can be gathered through interrogations and debriefings of terrorists that have been held with no contact with al-Qaeda or other groups for years?
Again, a more detailed response in closed session, and let me just hold it for closed, ma'am, and I think
I can't say whether there's a periodic review.
Ma'am, obviously we would do things for a purpose.
On March 17, 2005, Director Porter Goss stated that waterboarding fell into, quote, an area of what I will call professional interrogation techniques, end quote. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yes, ma'am. And again, let me defer that to closed session, and I would be happy to discuss it in some detail.
Feinstein also discussed whether lessons learned from the faulty intelligence provided before the Iraq War will be applied to intelligence gathering about Iran's nuclear program.
Ambassador Negroponte and other intelligence officials have estimated that Iran is some years away from a nuclear weapons capability. How confident are you of these estimates?
Again, I'd be happy to give additional detail in closed session, but I do want to say more about this when it opens. Iran is a difficult problem. We call it a hard target. But I think it unfair to compare what it is we believe we know about Iran with what it is we prove to know or not know about Iraq. We have got a great deal of intelligence focus on the target. I would say that judgment was given somewhere between medium and high confidence, ma'am.
Given the problems with estimates of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, how can the American public be confident of the accuracy of estimates regarding Iranian plans and programs?
Yes, ma'am. Fair question. And, we've got to earn confidence by our performance. We have to earn confidence by our performance. We've learned a lot of lessons on the Iraq WMD study, many of the lessons you've documented for us. One key one that I wanted to mention when the chairman was talking about it, the Iraq WMD estimate was essentially worked in a WMD channel. It was absent a regional or cultural context. We are not doing that now. It was looked at almost square cornered-wise, mathematically, ma'am, in terms of precursor chemicals or not, precursor equipment or not. Absent, I think, a sufficient filter through Iraqi society and what we knew of it, we're not doing that on Iran. You know, besides the technical intelligence, there's a much more complex and harder to develop field of intelligence that has to be applied as well. How are decisions made in that country? Who are making those decisions? What are their real objectives?
We'll turn back to our guests now. Ambassador Robert Hutchings, at one point in the hearing, Senator Chuck Hagel asked how the CIA can be pulled out of its groupthink mentality and encouraged to consider alternative analysis. Do you think Hayden can do that?
Well, I remember his answer to the question, which is really quite good, that it's really a matter of attitude and culture. I worry, though, that the strategic and analytic capacity of the agency has been pretty severely weakened, in part because the administration really doesn't care to have it. And the organization I used to chair, the National Intelligence Council, has now taken on so many new functions in supporting Ambassador Negroponte that its capacity for thinking broadly and long-term, and equally important, in fact more important, accessing the best thinking outside of government is not as great as it was. I think that should be a high priority for General Hayden as he takes over.
John Brennan,
if I could just say a word on the earlier exchange, I think there does need to be a new balance struck between individual liberties and the needs of security. I think we've strayed too far from where a democratic society wants to be.
John Brennan, given the CIA's place in this new national security flowchart, do you think the agency can ever be truly independent, can ever speak truth to power?
I think a lot of it depends on the leadership within the agency. And as I said, Mike Hayden has demonstrated previously his willingness to stand up to power, specifically within the Department of Defense. He wears a general's uniform, but yet he's been willing to push back against Secretary Rumsfeld on some issues in terms of where certain intelligence agencies should report to within the community. So you mentioned a flowchart within the intelligence community. I think that's one of the issues, and that's what I think Bob was addressing, that there's some confusion on roles and responsibilities, and that needs really to be clarified.
Speaking of the uniform, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah was generally laudatory during his question period, but he did address the question of whether Hayden's status as an active duty military officer would mean that his allegiance would be to the Pentagon.
Well, General Hayden, there's been some commentary about the fact that you continue to wear the uniform that you have so proudly distinguished over your long, I think, 35-year career. Certainly you're not the first director of Central Intelligence to wear it, but let me just ask you directly, because I think this needs to be on the record. Let's say that you step out from your office for a moment, and then you return. There are two messages for you. They're marked exactly the same time, these two messages. One is from Ambassador Negroponte, and the other one is from Secretary Rumsfeld. Whose call are you going to return first?
Yes, sir, that's pretty straightforward.
That's straightforward, yeah.
Yes, sir. I work for the ambassador, and so I would return his call.
That's right. You're going to report to Ambassador Negroponte.
Yes, sir.
Now, let me add the chairman of the Intelligence Committee.
Yes, sir. I would set up a conference call.
And a more serious question, what does your military experience bring to this position, should you be confirmed?
Yes, sir. I'm proud of my military experience. It's been fairly broad, but if you stop and do the math, there's a big chunk of time. I actually stopped and did this over the weekend, more than 20 years in intelligence. And if you look at the career in another way, there's an awful lot of it with an interface to the civilian world. 4 years as an ROTC instructor, 2 years on the National Security Council staff, 2 years at an embassy behind the Iron Curtain. So I think, frankly, it's given me a pretty good background in terms of the military aspect has to do with leadership and management, the intelligence aspect, lots of experience, and working in a civilian environment is not going to be something that's foreign to me.
John Brennan, you were in the CIA for 25 years. Do you think that this question of having a military leader is going to be a real issue?
I think it's going to be an issue for some, but Mike has demonstrated that he can be an independent thinker with a uniform on. Symbolically, in fact, it might be important for some within the agency as well as the rest of the intelligence community that if Mike is confirmed that he would retire from his military service. But I think whether he's wearing that uniform or not, it's really not going to make a difference as far as how he comports himself as the head of the CIA.
We're joined by NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, the Democrats didn't seem to be getting a lot of traction here. What's going on politically?
Corey, you could hear it in the tones of Dianne Feinstein's voice, increasingly frustrated as she went through her list of questions for the general, and he repeatedly said, well, we'll take that up later, Senator, in the closed session, and other kinds of frustration from some of the other Democrats. They're in a position that's somewhere between difficult and impossible with respect to this nominee. First off, they don't want to block Mike Hayden. They like him. They think he's probably the right man for the job. They think he's better qualified than either of his two predecessors and that he's probably better qualified in terms of his disposition and personality. They know him pretty well. He's been briefing them for years. And they think that he's probably the right man for the job, at least the right man who would be picked by President Bush. They might have somebody else they would prefer, but he seems to be the right guy. So on issues that they do want to raise with him, in a sense, they find themselves helpless. They're the minority. They don't have the chairmanship, so they can't force the general to talk in open session about things he doesn't want to talk about. They can't threaten to stop him in the committee unless he becomes more forthcoming because they don't control the committee. And when you get out on the whole floor of the Senate, then they're going to be politically damned if they don't and damned if they do. If they don't try to stop him, they're going to be called too timid by people on the left and people in the Democratic Party who say you can't let the man who ran these surveillance programs in the NSA that are such an outrage, and certainly many people are outraged about them, you can't let that guy go through like a bunch of matadors with a bull going past you. And on the other hand, if they do try to stop him, they're going to be branded pro-terrorist. And we saw today, right at the very beginning of the hearings, Pat Roberts opened by decrying the leaks to the media and basically waving the bloody shirt from 9/11 and saying, I'm a strong supporter of the First and the Fourth Amendments and civil liberties are great, but you have no civil liberties if you're dead. So there's the argument. And of course, if you continue to follow that argument, you probably won't have too many civil liberties while you're alive either.
Well, let me ask you then, where do we go from here politically?
I think he gets overwhelmingly confirmed, although there'll be a lot of speeches given warning him about how to behave, and then he'll take over the job, and he'll be the person that he's expected to be, I think, pretty much by both parties. He'll be as fair-minded as he can about it, but he's already made up his mind about whether or not this program is legal.
Thank you, Ron Elving, John Brennan of the Analysis Corporation, Ambassador Robert Hutchings of Princeton University. You've been listening to a special report on the confirmation hearings on the nomination of General Michael Hayden to be director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I'm Corey Flintoff.